The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Conan's out today, so Mikey is taking his place. Mikey, welcome. This is your second football show in a row.
I know, yeah, sure. I'm just a big ball aficionado now.
You will basically, you'll come on any podcast you're offered.
I'm a complete tart.
Jamie Carragher's wearing Everton training gear. You don't mind what podcast you go on. Stevie is here as usual on a Thursday. And lads, we have to talk about this GPA statement because we talk so much about Congress and we talked about how the GPA, you know, they were a bit late coming into the game with their opposition 2 days before. They kind of are accused of sitting on Central Council by Jarlett Byrne, said they sat in on Central Council meetings and didn't, you know, voice any opposition whatsoever until a flimsy opposition at the end. Then you have Dermot Early saying things after Congress like, I think we'll stand up fairly well for ourselves, and it was a slap in the face. And then you're kind of waiting, okay, here, the GPA might actually going to do something about this and say, look, we're not accepting this and we're going to do something. So they released a statement last night and they say, while the player's body accepts the decision of Congress. So that's it. That's kind of, forget about it, we were accepting Congress. And for me, it's almost the most surprising thing ever, in that the GPA was never really realistically going to go against the going to go head to head with the GAA here.
It's hard to know. I'm a big fan and supporter of the GPA, probably more so than what you are, Wooly. But you know, maybe they were late in coming to the party in terms of voicing opposition to the proposals at Congress. And you know, some of the players have certainly come out and tweeted in the past couple of days that you know, they did participate in certain polls and whatever last year, and we don't know whether that's true or not. And
that was for their proposal that failed at Congress last year, because I saw Niall Morgan tweeting about that, and like, I mean, 100% you'd imagine they are going to be polled on their own proposal, yeah, and have an influence in their own proposal, because they did influence that proposal. But we're talking about next year's proposal. So yeah, Niall Morgan wasn't covering the consultations that went on about that proposal. But just on that, is the in the GPA statement, they listed a fairly comprehensive list of different meetings they had about Duffy's proposal. You know, and you know, they list out the months. May, they had a series of nationwide regional workshops. August, they had one. September, then they had a meeting of the GPA football competition steering group. Now, I contacted Croke Park, and Croke Park have no idea what the GPA competition steering group actually is, but they have other ones. September, October. Now, in October, they said they circulated a full document to all members with a separate explanation of key points of the proposal. So they're basically, this is, they're listing this off because Jarlett Byrne said on the GAR here last week that they just sent a flimsy WhatsApp group message and there was no consultation with players. So, you know, that's what Jarlett Byrne's said. The GP are saying there was consultation with players in their statement.
They're blinding us with a lot of information. There are a lot of names of a lot of groupings we never heard before, like the football competition steering group. And these, I wonder about these emails. I don't doubt they're sending them out. I'm wondering how many players have these emails going into their junk.
Are
inboxes.
Taking them up on it, yeah.
Are you going to read it? You know, football for a lot of lads is still a hobby, and they're not going to get into the area of admin and unions when it comes to their football. And a great deal of them might not care, and then an even greater proportion probably care after the vote is done. And if they weren't going to go to the mattresses and protest at their own proposal being thrown out, they're very unlikely to go to the mattresses and kick up a stink when someone else's proposal does go through. So that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's probably similar to every club having their own AGM, you expect the players to turn up, but, you know, and voice their opinion, but they actually don't.
They don't, yeah. There's a lot of jargon on it. Like, I'm after mentioning the GPA Football Competition Steering Group, you know, and then they're talking about in October there's a proposal discussed at the GPA Player Safety and Welfare meeting, and then there was another meeting in November at the GPA National Executive Committee, and then there was another one in December at the annual GPA Rep Summit, and then there was another one at the National Executive Committee. And how many committees and subcommittees and different things do they have? And like, is all this getting lost? And like, I mean, Stevie, when you say you're a big defender of them, and like, we can all defend the GPA because of what they brought in at the past. Back when we were starting out, we weren't getting gear, we weren't getting mileage, we weren't getting expenses. We're getting all that now. And like, 100% you'll say that. But back in the day, the GPA, to get the grants through, they had players sitting in a dressing room waiting 10 minutes to delay the start of the game, right? They got the grants through because of little threats like that. In parades before games, the Cork hurlers were going around with their socks pulled down as a protest. They got Cork's conditions immeasurably improved and went head to head with the Cork County Board. Like, why are the, championship restructure, Stevie, is the single most important thing in the GAA affecting players. Yeah. So, like, you can do your different committees and different player welfare stuff, but as a union, what's your main function? Yeah,
well, that's the type of corrective measures that you'd expect the players' body to go and do. And
but they're not. But you know, how can you say you're a big supporter of them in the context of this is a huge, huge thing?
I am a supporter of them. Obviously, I've been out of the loop since I've retired, but when I was playing, you know, anything that we ask for as a team from Armagh, from the GPA, you know, we always get full support from them. I'm only voicing my opinion in terms of when I was an active player. I don't know the full goings on at the minute with the GPA, but you know, you would expect the player's body at the minute, if they are sitting in a meetings with Central Council, go and represent the players.
Yeah.
You know, and if that isn't the case, then, you know, something has to be done and something has to be sorted. But in relation to, you know, the incidents that you brought up, that's exactly what you want. But what we can't have happening in the GAA is the threat of strike, because that would be, you know, totally destructive to
but there's no, like, have negotiations, have consultations, have all these committees, have your own proposal thrown out, have, like, I mean, negotiation doesn't seem to be working. Like, you know, and it was the same with the government grants. Negotiation, the opposition to that was huge, and it just took a little bit of a threat to strike. It took a proper union action. The action the CPA is coming out with now, they are acting like a proper union, both publicly and in the background. The GPA cannot call themselves a players' union anymore. Like, just stop calling yourselves that, because that's not what you are.
I just think that it's very hard to herd this group of people. I hate to refer to players as a herd, but like, there was people suggesting that Dermot Earley didn't speak particularly passionately or convincingly at Congress, and then we're seeing reported today that, you know, less than a year ago he was speaking out in favour of the Super 8. Is the chief executive of the GAA, of the GPA, is he particularly opposed to the Super 8? If he isn't, on a personal level, he really needs to hear it from the people he represents that they are very opposed to it, for him to get row behind them. And perhaps between the consultation level and apathy among players, perhaps Dermot Earley wasn't getting that sense from players.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Dermot Earley actually sat in on a Central Council meeting on the 29th of October, heard it was a one-item agenda, and this was Duffy's proposal, and he sat in on it and didn't say anything, and didn't talk about, well, hang on a second, Pádraig, we have slight concerns about this and we have slight concerns about that, and we, from hearing about it from our players, we'd like to change this, you know, or that.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, if you're properly consulting with your players, surely if you're in a meeting, you'd go, from what we're hearing on the ground here, he didn't say anything.
Yeah, and that is your opportunity to voice your concern, especially when you're sitting in on meetings like that there. So, you know, and then take it back to the players and get their overall feedback on the Super 8 proposals. But, you know,
because if you can't affect it from, like, you know, proper threats from the outside, you're on the inside affected from this. So I don't see
the bureaucracy.
I don't see GPA working from the outside like the CPA are. The CPA would love to be in there saying, Duffy, no, we're not with that one. So the GPA are neither backing up their players publicly, nor when they're in on meetings are they backing up. And you mentioned Dermot Earley's position on this, and I don't want to be too hard on Dermot, because, like, I mean, he's only a new CEO and he was president. And you wonder how much, you know, hand hands-on, you know, activity presidents would have. Like, Desi ran the show and he's pretty new into the job. But Dermot's initial thoughts on the structure was it's quite a good structure. You're going to make an All-Ireland series group, a group stage. It should be very exciting. The fact that not all the games are in Croke Park, that's something we're all crying out for. We want to see the provincial venues used. So that's his personal opinion, as in he was happy with it. You know, and then you're trying to canvass players and you... I just don't know. It's an awful messy thing from the GPA. And another thing, if their list of meetings and discussions and effort, because the picture they're painting is Jarlett's wrong. It wasn't a haphazard text. Mm-hmm. This is the amount of work we put into this. Well, like, if you're putting that much time and work and resources, why would you wait for 2 days before Congress to voice your opinion on it? Like, I mean, or else that's just, like, what are we giving you? What is the GA funding you for? To waste their money by wasting so much resources and time doing nothing. So, like, I mean, I don't see the GPA having come out well. If it was a flimsy WhatsApp group, it's terrible governance. And this is the greatest waste of time, what they've tweeted out, because, I mean, everything on that list of bullet points is completely waste of time now. They've accepted Congress. They were too late on it. So I don't see how the GPA come out of
what
this.
What we have to remember is Dermot Earley's personal opinion a year ago certainly could have changed, you know, and the fact that he is now representing the players' body, you know, and, you know, his having received feedback from the players, he recognises the fact that, you know, things have changed and his circumstances have changed dramatically since you know he expressed his own personal opinion on it. So we have to take that into account.
Yeah,
as well.
He's allowed to have his own personal Absolutely. Opinion, and that can differ from the players. Sure, all the players have different opinions. 100%. That's the problem, you know. So there's nothing wrong with Dermot's personal opinion on it. Absolutely nothing mm-hmm. whatsoever. But he still has to represent his players. If this consultation is going on, if Dermot's sitting in a central council meeting, he has to represent the views of the players if he knows them. And they're saying they did know them because they're circulating all this stuff. But, you know, Jarlett Burns is of the opinion that they're not, they didn't consult with them enough.
Well, certainly in the aftermath of it all, there seems to be a lot of dissatisfaction amongst the players. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, when we get to the Super 8 stages in the Championship, how concerned are they about it then when they're actually participating in the games and in the competition?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And it just the CPA actually came out as well on Wednesday morning, and they're like that, they're making all the right noises now. I mean, this has gone through now, so you wonder how, you know, their hands are probably tied. But Declan Brennan says everything is an option now. A strike is not a road we want to go down, but because we want to play more games than strike, but everything's an option now and everything will be done to get this across the line. That's just what I want to hear, you know, as someone who someone who really wants change and wants this right and wants everybody to be happy, instead of there's always some people disgruntled. You just love the GPA to say that we're going to fix this and we have the power, we're the cash cow, we're tired of being disrespected in Congress. It's about time the players took the power back, and without league games next year, We'll see what these delegates will do. Bang, everything's gone. You know what I mean? But it's just
Once
not
again,
happening.
Are you ever really going to get total buy-in with that there as well? You know, there's going to be players against that, and you can't expect the players' body to represent everyone. You know, so there will be players totally against that their view. And personally, you know, I don't believe that an all-out strike is the way forward. Yeah. I would like all the bodies and all the parties to get around the table, and you know, talk sensibly about it and come up with a solution instead of, you know, the forward and back bickering that's going on at the minute, especially on social media. But, you know, there's plenty of debates about it, and there's plenty of, you know, everyone has their own format for the championship. Which one's the right one?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. On a more light-hearted note here, lads, we want to talk about rugby here. We have our own rugby podcast, The Hard Yards. But there's one thing about the Italy-England game last, was it Sunday or Saturday?
Sunday.
And you see the highlights of it, and this is Conor O'Shea chancing his arm with some not dodgy tactics, but in the rules, went to the referee before the game, gave him a heads up, so the referee's not going to be a bit shocked of what to do. He's had time to think of it. England didn't know what to do. It reminded me of Dublin and Donegal in 2011, where we're all watching a game and we're saying, what the hell is going on here? Donegal are putting everyone into their own half, right? But it was just interesting, the rugby reaction to the game, the rugby game moving away from its traditional shape and the GAA game moving away from its traditional shape, because you have Matt Dawson, for example, you know, the England rugby player, scrum half, saying, well done Italy on ruining this international. Now world rugby has to change the laws because of your inability to compete at this level. And it got me thinking, wait and you see, world rugby will change the rule on this to not allow rugby go too far away from its traditional shape. You know what I mean? They'll want to keep it exciting for spectators. It was disorganised. Now, Conor O'Shea, fair play, went within the rules. But we're told when you put 15 men inside your own half, we've no full forward lines, we've no half forward lines. We're being told the game is evolving and that this is a good and that this is a good thing. Do you get what I'm saying, lads? Why can't, if we were to even mention a tweak of the rules to bring back a bit traditional shape on GAA, there's war on it. That we're prehistoric, we're traditionalist. We like that's what's being said.
In fairness, this Conor O'Shea's tactic has come about because of a tweak in the rules in rugby. So he's kind of exploiting a loophole that was kind of inadvertently discovered, and he's completely right to do it. And I thought it was fascinating to watch the England players' heads implode, kind of going, "What the hell's going on?" But we have no idea what's going on.
I absolutely agree with that. If it's within the rules,
to move away from the rugby analysis, let's move it on to the point I'm trying to make. Why are we accepting that the game is evolving when the game has gone so far away from traditional values and shape? And that seems to be okay. You seem to be a bit of an idiot to say, geez, I'd love if the full forward line would just stay up there and the attacking corner backs, and it's evolving. But where is it evolving to?
Well, maybe one way of looking at it is there's far, far too many training sessions. So there's far too many training sessions in comparison to what there is games. And those training sessions allow coaches and managers to develop different systems. If there was less training sessions and more games, would they be able to develop the systems and refine them as much as what they are now?
Yeah, but okay, training's, yeah, maybe there's too much tactics. But the defensive tactics that's come into the game, if this is world rugby and you've got a governing body looking at this, you go, right, that's not that exciting, that's a little bit, and they might say, right, three forwards, three backs have to stay up there at all times. So there's no more attacking full back lines. This is what they would do.
Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make is this evolution that everyone's saying. Like, soccer evolved into a game that has four defenders against one forward, two forward. That's the natural development that it's going to go towards. So I can't ever see Gaelic games evolving back towards, okay, I'm not going to pack my defence, because that's just a conservative way of protecting your goals, you know?
I like the idea that, Steve, human nature is for the game to go the way it has gone. If coaches have a chance to fiddle with things, rugby is like organised chaos, so the rules do have to be tweaked as they go, but it is admirable the way they do constantly tweak it. In the GAA, they tweak the rules something minor like the mark, and there's people have a shit fit over it. So you can kind of, it is a problem for the GAA that they seem to like change last weekend, but in terms of changing the rules of the game, then there's arguments about the old chestnut about, you know, oh well, how can you referee that? You know, we've only got a referee, we've got no linesmen at Junior B matches at the weekend, so how can you get one referee who's already overweight and unfit at the wrong end of the field? How can you get him to police whether there's three forwards inside the 45-yard line? So all these things that aren't a concern at the top level are a concern at the top level, because the GAA wants everything to be from the top down.
It is difficult to do, but I just love the way sporting bodies protect their product. And there's nothing wrong with saying I want 15 on 15 now, or a variation of that. There's, because sometimes older pundits get a raw deal for that. Like, I can enjoy most games of football, but the ones that descend into, you know, 15 men in behind your 45, like, I mean, there's nobody, I don't think anybody enjoys that. And there's nothing wrong with saying you don't enjoy that. And if you can tweak a rule to encourage teams to go away from that model, then tweak it. And that shouldn't be...
I believe we're all in agreement here that football in particular has gone really ugly, you know. But wouldn't you love a rule change for 1 year, a trial period as they call it, 1 year, man on man, 15 against 15, and that would certainly see who is capable of playing inter-county football and who isn't.
And
you must kick the ball, you're only allowed one hand pass in a row, you know. It would be fascinating, you know, because you would certainly see, you know, which teams have been working and focusing on their ball skills over the last couple of years and which haven't been.
I'm literally up for any rule. Like, the mark had huge opposition and it's bloody absolutely seamless. Like, you don't even notice it. A little whistle goes, he can't be tackled. In fact, it speeds up the game because there's none of these rooks trying to dispossess him. But there was massive opposition to this mark. It's bizarre.
I don't mind the mark, being honest, and it's coming from a background of playing international rules as well. I always enjoyed the mark. If you know how to play it sensibly, Yeah. You know, it can be a good thing for your team, but certainly, you know, it hasn't caused any confusion that I've seen at any game so far.
Yeah, another thing before we move on, lads, I wanted to talk about this Tyrone expenses thing that came out last week, and that's the Tyrone players are being asked to pay for certain things. As it turns out, it's just, I think there was some recovery drink. I contacted the Tyrone County Board and they said, look, it was a recovery drink that was above and beyond. You know, someone said, will we get this? And it wasn't your regular recovery drink. It was something kind of extra. So the players had chipped in 15 each to get this. Now, that's their story.
This isn't something we have to tell WADA about, is it? It sounds like.
I don't know where it came from. I hope it wasn't off the internet. Being shipped from America, some American bloody steroid gym. But anyways, that was the story. So, like, I mean, there was some reports last week about what every team spends, right? Mm-hmm. And the Tyrone spent 484,000 on their senior football team, right? And Mayo spent 1.63. No, it's not on your senior football team. It's on
the overall.
It's the overall intercounty teams. I mean, Dublin was 1.151 million. Now we'll just concentrate on that. Mayo's one was absolutely massive, right? And from my information, Tyrone seemed very low. And from my information, about 60 or 70% of your costs yearly for county boards are mileage expenses. It's players, you know, obviously mm-hmm. looking to get 50 cent a mile. Now it's up to 65 after last year. So that's 60 to 70%. Now, Dublin wouldn't have any mileage expenses, really, because all their lads are in Dublin, you know, they're driving sponsored cars. And apparently, when you have a sponsored car, you don't get the full 65 cent. You only get something like 10, mm-hmm. 15 cent. So they're 1.51 million without the 60 or 70% expenses.
But we do know that they are providing meal plans or whatever for their players, and that could be eating up a lot of.
Yeah, meal plans. Wouldn't you love a breakdown of where it's going? Because, like, I mean, it seems like such the disparity. There's a million in the difference between Tyrone and Dublin. You know, and Tyrone, if they're saying 60, 70% is theirs is travel expenses, and Dublin's wouldn't have too many. I just love a breakdown, because, like, Tyrone, and another thing is, like, it's a stick used to beat Dublin with is, oh, they've loads of money. But, like, I mean, are Tyrone not proof that you don't actually have to be spending all that money to be very, very competitive?
I'm shocked that Tyrone actually, it's coming out now that lads are having trouble getting their mileage paid, which, as we were talking about earlier, that happens in every county. But I always thought Tyrone were the absolute model, you know, Club Tyrone, Garvahy.
I was surprised too.
It looks amazing. And even when you go to Tyrone and Derry, went to the championship match last year in Celtic Park, and there was the Tyrone lads were all dressed alike, not in tracksuits. They had, like, you know, smart casual gear all matching. And I was thinking, Jesus, there's money to be spent here in Tyrone, because they're all dressed the same, from the kit man to Mickey Hart to the players. I was thinking, on top of the development centres, like, they've got money to burn, and Club Tyrone is the model for everybody else. But
exactly,
it's not a bottomless pit, though.
That's the perception out there.
Is these costings based on what the county board pay out? You know, because I would seriously question what Club Tyrone are putting in as well. I would say they are contributing a hell of a lot towards the Tyrone cause as well, because, you know, you always hear stories from the outside about the fundraising and the amount that the fundraising on a yearly basis. So I would expect that they'd be contributing on top of that 480,000, whatever it is.
Yeah, it needs to, like, what are Mayo appointing 1.6?
It's a very
million?
Big county.
It's a mileage, you see, as it is, and they could have some lads in Dublin that are travelling maybe twice a week, and that's like you're on the gravy train if you're travelling. Like, people give out about commutes. Like, genuinely, my commute from Dublin to down to Laois for training, I used to be hitting maybe 1,000 a month on expenses coming down three times a week. Like, it is a great earner, and that's tax free. Like, I mean, it's a super few quid at the end of the month. And we used to meet up then in the Putchin still. So you actually, we'd carpool down in four. So only one car is actually doing the bulk of the driving, but we all put in for the four separate expenses. So we were really, like, I was getting a nice few quid out of these expenses. Well, they've tightened up on that.
Don't
now.
Be letting the secret out there. Now, you know, you used to hear stories about the gays going around the car park counting the amount of cars that were in the car park.
Yeah, they started doing that. They started doing that with us.
But certainly, you know, if a player is travelling, I actually think a player is entitled to his mileage for taking time out of his own daily regime to go and train with the county team, regardless if he's carpooling or not.
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely agree. Like, expenses are expenses, but people might be surprised how much they add up every month. Because like, I had a friend playing and he thought he was playing semi-professional soccer, like getting 20 quid a night. And I said, like, I'm getting 100 for coming for driving out here. And it's, and we all, you know, it's the amateur game. It's just this perception.
And they are handed that in a wee brown envelope and it makes you feel great about
it. Yeah. You're semi-professional now, buddy.
I remember playing youth soccer and reserve soccer for Glenavon and getting a brown envelope on a Saturday and there was a fiver in it. I was delighted with that.
And we complain we're not looked after in the GAA then. Yeah, it's bizarre. And like, that's the thing, Mayo go away for warm weather training camp as well. So I can, in my head, I can see what Mayo are spending.
Well, you would expect a warm weather training camp will be upwards of 100,000 almost.
That's a big chunk. But like, my mind is just boggling about what are Dublin doing with all this money, you know, because you hear all these stories, their meals are paid for and this professional setup. But then they could be wasting it on different fellas. Instead of having one sports psychologist, they could have four. Well, you know what I mean? They could be wasting.
They have a media manager, they're paying an awful lot of money to help keep you away from their players as well.
Yeah, he's working all right.
I also hear stories about the apps and the iPads that they have and they have, you know, access to matches literally a half an hour, 1 hour after a game.
Those systems, the
systems and the technology that they're spend a lot of time and effort in would be costly as well.
Yeah, okay lads, that's fair enough. Maybe someday we'll find out, we'll get a detailed can you do a freedom of information? Obviously you can't, they're not public.
You can't anyway.
You could just maybe ask them nicely and we'll get a breakdown, because it would be lovely to know exactly what they're spending all that on. But want to turn attention, lads, to Down Football, because they've been in the headlines recently for the wrong reasons. And you know, the picture that was being painted is that they're in disarray, it's an absolute disaster. And in fairness, they're on a 14 match losing streak, but maybe they turned the corner on Saturday night because they had a brilliant result against Meath. And we have Mark Poland on the line now. Mark, I was getting a little bit worried about you, down on a 14 game losing streak and Liverpool falling to pieces as usual at the start of the new year.
I thought things had turned a bit better on Saturday night, but Monday night there just put a spanner in the works again. So the life of a Liverpool supporter, doom and gloom today, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, you've ended a 14 game losing streak against Meath. Is this a corner turned for Down?
I think hopefully it is. It's been a very, very tough 14-15 months for the group of players that are there, but I have to say it was probably the best Down performance that I've come across maybe in the last 3 or 4 years. A lot of young fellas and the team stood up and were counted on Saturday night, especially after the first two games. It was a real test of character, and it was just very, very pleasing to see the younger lads step up to the plate and grind out a win which probably hopefully will do all the players and the management the world of good.
Yeah, because you mentioned character there, and you know, a lot of the perception looking in from the outside is that Down Football's in a crisis. Eamon Burns doesn't have the faith of the squad, but when you put in a performance like that that shows a lot of character, and you have Eamon Burns coming on after it and saying our back was to the wall but we dug in, squads that are very unhappy generally don't dig in.
Yeah, look, to be honest with you, I think there was a lot of stuff written and that there in the week previous. It was a lot of false information. A lot of it wasn't true. The players were unhappy within themselves for the way they performed in the first two games. There was a lot of new lads coming in too, so we need to take that there on board, that a lot of lads made their debuts. There's a lot of lads coming back from injuries who were maybe not match fit. But experience is a big thing to have in inter-county football, and unfortunately through injuries and lads maybe just coming back from injuries and that we were maybe a wee bit short of experience in the first two games. But like, the win against Meath, who were coming off the back of a very big win against Derry too, that was all the more pleasing, you know. And hopefully we can continue it on, because I don't think this past 14-15 months are a true reflection on the footballers that we have in Down.
Yeah, what was the false news exactly that was coming out?
That players weren't happy with management and that players were walking away and this, that and the other. It's just a lot of stuff within Down itself. I'm not sure what it was like outside the county, but you know, everybody just seemed to be talking about Down, and you know, that's just, it was just a lot of false stories going about.
Right, okay, but have fellas not walked off the panel like Damien Turley, Ryan Mallon?
There was two or three that did go, but like as I say, that's the same every year, you know. And yeah, them lads, like I know Ryan Mallon, for like I would know him particularly well, and like the lad has a lot going on outside of football. It wasn't because he wasn't getting a chance or anything, you know.
Right,
he's a lot going on with work and different things, so it's natural. You know, we still had the guts of maybe nearly 40 players there, and like every year I've been in a down panel, there have been lads who've, you know, maybe decided to move on. I just think a lot had been made of maybe those two or three players that unfortunately did decide to move on, but you know, I think it was all amicable. I don't think there was any like Ryan addressed the players himself, so you know, it was all amicable. And as I say, a big fuss made over nothing.
Right, that's interesting, because then on the same topic then people throw in the Kilcoo players and they're not really featuring. Well, they didn't in the first two games, and then they didn't come back, they didn't get it on, they were on the, in the squad, but then they came home in a car instead of coming back on the bus with everybody else.
Yeah, look, I think with the Kilcoo lads, like Jerome and Ryan had both, you know, serious injuries last year, and you know, both shoulder injuries, and the two lads were maybe just finding their feet. I know young Jerome hadn't kicked the ball maybe in 15, 16 months. Or sorry, I think he did come back into the club level but picked up a foot injury as well. So, yeah, a lot's made of these things here. But at the end of the day, respect the management's decision. The lads played on Saturday night. Dara had an outstanding game, and as did Ryan, and then Jerome came on too. Like, they're quality footballers who are going to add to the team. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Kilcoo have won 5 championships in their own down, and they've a lot of very, very talented footballers. So I was just glad to see those lads prove a point as such on Saturday night, and hopefully they can continue that form for the rest of the year.
So that's interesting. Like, the Kilcoo fellas are back. You know, you're able to explain the two or three fellas that have gone. You know, there was a lot of people complaining that you couldn't even make the 26, but you're getting a run now as well. You know, you got in at the weekend, and I'm sure you'll want to build on that. So, like, it's amazing how things can turn around just after one game.
Yeah, okay, don't get me wrong. You know, I was late back to the panel. I wasn't back until after Christmas. Myself and Emma, we had a wee child there 6 months ago, and I just wanted to spend a bit of time with her and him over Christmas, and do things without having to worry about being here or there for a training session. And, you know, I kept myself in reasonable nick. I hadn't targeted the first two games at all, but I came back into training and felt relatively good. And just after the Fermanagh game, you know, I thought I could add a wee bit to the panel for Clare, even that wee bit of experience. But as I say, I hadn't targeted those two games at all, and I was just thankful to get 10 minutes and help the team, you know, on Saturday night. You know, if me being around younger players is going to help down in any way, then I'm happy to do that, you know.
Yeah, I suppose we talk about the 14 game losing streak, and like on the outside it looks terrible on paper, but like, I mean, you won the league, you topped the league rather in Division 2 in 2015, you lost the final then to Roscommon. Like, sometimes for a team like Down or Laois or Kildare or Westmeath, we saw it with, getting into Division 1 can often be a poison chalice, because, like, let's be honest, there is a huge step up to teams in that division. So then you lose the 6, you lose in the championship, and suddenly this is an awful run when it in no way can be explained.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, if any true Down supporter was honest, I think Down would find it tough in Division 1, and base reason why is because we have an awful lot of young players who are new to intercounty football, and you know yourself, it is tough whenever you have experienced players and you have, you know, lads who have been about there. Last year with Eamon coming in, things were a wee bit late getting going last year, and you know, it was a very, very tough season. There's no two ways about that. You know, the championship defeat was pretty hurtful, and losing to Longford, qualifier games are always like that. They could go either way, no matter if you've played Division 1 football or Division 3 football in the National League, and we were lucky that day too. So and again, a lot was made of the fact that, you know, we didn't win a game, and I think that's just maybe Down's past, you know, with All Ireland wins before, that, you know, everything's monitored so closely.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. And as I say, hopefully we've turned the corner after last Saturday night's win.
Yeah, I don't obviously want you to comment on Eamon Burns because he's current management. But since James McCartan left, has there been a general slide? You know, there has been in results, but has there been in kind of quality in training? You know, quality kind of just general standards.
No, I don't think so. A few people have mentioned that to me. Like, at the end of the day, if things weren't good, then I know personally I wouldn't be there.
Right.
James had a very good team. I think a lot of people underrated the team we had back in 2010 and the footballers we had in that team. I mean, somebody saying that it was probably one of the worst teams ever to feature in an All-Ireland final, but to me, if that team had stuck together and injuries hadn't fallen upon certain players and we had kept maybe Marty there as well, that team really could have pushed on and competed for 3-4 years. But a lot of people have seemed to move on. A lot of younger lads have come in and there always seemed to be maybe new faces coming in and we didn't have time really to settle in a certain team or things like that. There was a big, massive turnover of players. I think I calculated, 40-odd players within the space of maybe 3-4 years, which is a massive number, you know. So Jim came in after James and, as you say, we got the league final and, you know, got into Division 1, although the championship wasn't great that year either. But I wouldn't say that at all, actually. The training this year with the addition of Cathal Murray has been very good.
Right, okay, that's interesting. And you mentioned a lot of new young players onto the squad, and this is another stick that's been used to beat down football with, as in there's no young players coming through, and maybe this is more fake news, because maybe you don't necessarily have to be winning at underage, you can still get good players through, but on paper, you know, you haven't won a minor Ulster since 1999, you know, you're not winning as much at underage level. Generally associate down with, you know, winning things at underage level.
Yeah, well, we won an All-Ireland Minor in 2005.
Yeah, but they reckon that was kind of an outlier.
Well, there was three...
I'm not saying that now. That's what's...
No, but you know what? I had a discussion with a man I would respect last week who I would meet Braven regularly. And he was telling me from between, I think it was 2005 and 2011, we won three Ulster under-21s. We featured in two All-Ireland under-21s. We won the All-Ireland Minor and we won seven All-Ireland school titles within that 6-year period.
Right.
So people can't tell me that, you know, things aren't... Well, and I know that there's maybe they got to 10 years ago, but you would expect those players now to be, you know, pushing on, but where have they gone? Nobody knows. Everybody has, you know, a life outside of football.
Well,
such,
that's it. There seems to be a big fallout rating down, doesn't there? Like, you seem to have such a pool of players, but there seem to be ones coming and going. And especially, you meant that team in 2010 broke up very quickly when it shouldn't really have. I know Marty and Danny Hughes and these fellas might have got injuries, but it still broke up a bit faster than it should have.
Yeah, like, that was, like, who knows, like, with injuries were a big thing then, you know, injuries really were. The year after that, we got to, I think it was another, the round before the quarterfinal, Cork dismantled us again. And then in 2012, we got the Ulster final and got another All-Ireland quarterfinal, you know, when Mayo beat us. It's frustrating, I suppose, that, you know, we didn't push on. But as I say, there seems to be more to life than football, unfortunately.
Yeah, you've made things very hard on yourselves now, Mark, because you lost the first two games to Fermanagh and Clare, you know, two teams that you might look at and say we need to pick up points off those two, because you have Derry away, then you have Kildare at home, then Galway at home, and then Cork away. So you've arguably, well, at least the last three anyway, Kildare, Galway and Cork are arguably the three best teams in it, you know, so you realise that you're up against it.
Fuck yeah, like it's the division is tough after the first two results. Obviously, they would have been the two games we would have been looking to, you know, even to set up a league there. There's no doubt that the next four games are very, very tough. But as I say, after beating Meath at home on Saturday night, you know, the players that will instill a big confidence to the younger lads in the team. And hopefully, as I say, we can push on. At the end of the day, it's a very, very tight division. it is a very tight division. Nobody would have expected us to beat Meath on Saturday night.
No.
Sure, Meath are probably one of the favourites to push on after their win against Derry. So, as I say, we'll take each game as it comes, and who knows, who knows.
Yeah, everybody's beating everyone, so it definitely gives you a chance. What's the mood like in the squad, Mark? Are you aware of the perception in your own county, nationally, about you?
Yeah, we are. They're like, there's no point in me dressing it up any other way. Everywhere you go, you've seen there's people talking about it, but it is, there's a lot of negativity. There's no doubt about it. The players' management have been, county board have been getting it from pillar to post, but to be honest with you, it's something I don't really take much heed to. I think to criticise and to be negative is the easiest thing in the world to do. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to do that there. And to be honest with you, some people I speak to, they wouldn't know if a ball was blue up or stuff. They just hear other people doing it and they add their own wee bit to the fire. And, you know, that's what it is. We know what's going on in the training field. Saturday night proved that we can't mix it. So it's up to the players to hopefully turn that negativity into positivity and get people back supporting the team again and not talking about things that go on behind the scenes as such.
Yeah, listen, well, thanks very much for taking the call, Mark, and best of luck. You've a tough end into the league, but sure, you might still do it.
Yeah, Liverpool still making it into the Champions League. You wouldn't know.
Well, now you've no chance if you're comparing it to that. Come here. Thanks a lot for taking the call.
All right, good luck.
Derek, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah?
Why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile of...
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that, you can ask you know that yourself.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff about Down, lads, because on the perception of the whole thing is that it's a disaster and it's crumbling. Mark Poland kind of paints a different picture. Now, I know the context of this is Mark Poland's in the squad, and when you're in a squad, you tend to be positive and, you know, keep your best side out. When I understand that, but still, little things like Mark Poland, he didn't really want to be considered until now, where people were saying, how is Mark Poland not in the 26? You know what I mean? He's saying one or two lads left the squad and they had genuine reasons, and from the outside you're looking at this like this is crumbling. You have the Kilcoo lads back against Meath, you have Kevin McKiernan then back against Meath, and suddenly Down look a much stronger team than they were.
Yeah, and you know, having been at their first game against Fermanagh, I had serious concerns about them. And my main concern was, where is the leadership? You know, where is the guys that provide inspiration to the younger generation, to their teammates when they really need it? And, you know, maybe we were looking above and beyond the players that were yet to come back in. And the Kilcoo players, as we all know, Kilcoo as a club are a fantastic team and a fantastic club. And those players will certainly add a lot of value to the down cause. Kevin McKiernan is now an experienced campaigner, recently won a Sigerson medal, you know, bringing that experience and value back to the team. And Mark Poland is still one of the best playmaking half forwards in Ulster.
Yeah, I'm a big
Ireland.
Fan. I'm a big fan of Mark Poland.
A fantastic footballer. So when he comes back into the squad, you know, he's certainly going to strengthen the cause again. And, you know, maybe it was just the lack of experience that they were, you know, really dependent on and heavily reliant on. And, you know, it certainly made a massive difference last weekend against Meath.
It's tough, 14-game losing streak. You know, to be a leader in that situation is tough. And as you say, when you haven't got your best players, like Kevin McKiernan is like one of only, what, two or three left from the team of 2010, who obviously are kind of the what anyone's going to be compared against for next while for Down. You know, if you're a young fella on that team and you're losing 14 games in a row, and maybe you're a leader at your club, but being a leader at a county team who are spiralling down like that, it must be terrible tough. So just to have, even as you say, even apart from their wonderful ability as footballers, have McKiernan and Poland back, like two wise heads that bring the other players around them on a whole lot, you'd imagine.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I've some sympathy for them on the 14-game losing streak, because Like, it obviously looks bad on paper, but I've seen so many counties go up to Division 1 and not be at the level that you need to be. Like, it happened to Kildare, it's happening to Roscommon this year, and on paper, look, they're on a 6-game losing streak, but you're on 6-game losing streak to teams that are just a lot better than you, and then suddenly your confidence is in an awful position going into the championship, and they took a beating from Monaghan, who were a top team in the first round, then lost embarrassingly to Wexford, and now
embarrassingly.
It's embarrassing. Well, last year, this year it's not embarrassing because they're obviously on the rise under our man Banty. But you know, I think a picture can be painted. I'm not trying to, like, 14 games inexcusable, but 14 games weren't all under Eamon Burns. You know, there was 8 under Eamon Burns, so like they're on an 8-game losing streak under Eamon Burns, and now they've won 1, so they've rebalanced it maybe to 8-1. But look, at the same time, I'm just painting a picture. And another thing is the idea that there's loads of lads not committing in the county.
Yeah.
But try can look at Laois and say there's loads of lads not committing, and look at the Laois hurlers and footballers. You're like, Wexford maybe a bit different this year because they've Banty, Armagh have McGeaney. In a lot of counties that don't have an inspirational type manager, you're always going to have fellas that are like, I don't really want to commit to that now.
For me, if I was playing for Down and looking to represent Down, you know, I believe that to have got an inspirational manager, you've got a man who's played and won 2 All-Ireland medals and played years for Down, and that's the type of character and player that you, or manager that you want to be playing under. Regardless of what type of manager they are, you still want to go and represent your county to the best of your ability. And the fact that you have a proven winner there from his playing days, you know, certainly adds to it. But you know, it is maybe when you look back at the history of Down football and the aristocrats that they like to call themselves, and the expansive type of football that they like to play, you know, it's certainly going against how they have been performing in the last few years. I believe that it is actually more than 8 games under Eamon Burns that they've been defeated in. But you know, those players, you know, they have to revert back to, you know, playing football and enjoying playing football, because that's the Down way, and they seem to have their hands tied at the minute, that they're just, and that comes with the pressures of losing game on game. You know, you certainly go out with the attitude that you want to express yourself as a footballer, but for some reason, you know, there's that much weight on your shoulders, you just don't freely do it, and you're not able to do it. But it'll be interesting to see if the Meath result, you know, can inject some appetite and some incentive into this Down panel, because you know, from the reports that I've got from guys that they were at the match, Down were dominant from start to finish in that match, and possibly should have won by a lot more. So, you know, they have it in their locker, especially with the experienced players back, that they can throw caution to the wind and go and shock teams. And they certainly shocked a lot of people last weekend.
It'll be interesting to see. They probably need 2 more wins. 6 points often keeps you safe in Division 2. I don't think, maybe Armagh got caught last year on 6, but they've got a horrible run in now because they've got Kildare, Cork, Galway, and the other strongest team in the group, which is Meath, obviously. They've beaten Meath, Kildare.
Derry away next
this weekend. So like, they've 4 really tough games, so it'll be interesting to see. But listen, it's a corner turn, and for some reason, maybe you're not on this boat, Stevie, because they're your rivals, but everybody that I know has a graft for Down. They're just they're a brilliant traditional county that have always played great football. You're looking at me here.
No, I'm actually in the club scene in Down this year, so I can't say too much.
Oh, you
about
can't.
Them.
That's right. Yeah, you're right in the mix. Yeah, so you have inside information here. What's going on here? Completely forgot about.
We've only started in the last few weeks. I can't be giving too much away.
Next week's show, I want a full report
and
Down football.
I can assure you, Armagh played them in the first round of the championship, so I won't be giving too much away.
Right, lads. The big one. There's actually, looking down through all the results, we'll do accumulators in the last section, but there's not too many glamour games. You know, you Derry and Down will be glamorous for certain reasons or whatever, but the one that's the huge game standout for everybody is the repeat of last year's All-Ireland, and it's in Croke Park, same venue. Usually for a few years this was the starting league game, you know, usually the repeat, but it's in the middle now. And like, I'm going to make the statement that Mayo have to win this game, and I'll tell you why they have to win this game. Because in 2012 they beat Dublin in league and championship. Since 2012, there's an impression out there that Mayo are a match for Dublin, but they've never beaten them since 2012. And a lot of the players now on the Dublin team will never have lost to Mayo, just won't even entertain. And a lot of the Mayo players, the newer players, will never have beaten Dublin, so they've lost. They've lost 7 and drawn 3 of their last 10 games against Dublin in league and championship. So like, I don't know, Stevie, psychologically it's almost like this just can't happen again.
Yeah, and it, you know, for the fourth game of the league, it holds so much importance to the Mayo cause.
Yeah.
Not so much Dublin, even though they have drawn their last couple of games, but Mayo, while they got off to a difficult start the first night out, you know, they've responded well and reacted well, and this is another opportunity, you know, to lay a firm marker down for the season ahead. You know, a few weeks ago, it's interesting that we, you know, they were talked about being finished, and we certainly built them up. But I think that Mayo are still in the top three teams in the country. They have always competed against Dublin. You know,
yeah,
so
but they have to beat them.
They have to get across the finish line. But, you know, is the be-all and end-all beating Dublin and Croke Park in a league game? I'm not so sure that it is. But it is.
But how much would that help them? You know, because there will be. You probably won't win an All-Ireland this year without beating Dublin. Like, and if you've never beaten them, I think a lot more importance is on this league game than
come August or September. Then when they meet them again, say, I'm sure they bet them the last time they met them, and everyone will just say, I but it was only the league.
Yeah, but in the players' heads, because
it is a massive thing in the players' heads. And I, you know, rewind the clock 13 years, you know, we played Dublin in the semi-final in 2002, a classic game. We beat them by a point, but we had them then in the first round of the National League the following February, and we wanted to make a serious statement that, you know, beating them in the All-Ireland semi-final was no fluke, and we want to go out now and make a statement. We ended up beating them by about 20 points, and that was the statement of intent from us.
Right.
We beat them that year again in the championship quite convincingly again, and that was a team laying down the marker. Mayo now have a chance, and we compared Mayo to our Armagh team a few weeks ago as well.
Yeah.
Mayo have a chance to lay a marker down. You know, is it the be all and end all of their season? Absolutely not. But they have a chance, a serious chance, to lay the marker down, boost confidence amongst the players, and you know, make everyone else aware throughout the country that they are here and the main business once again this year.
Yeah, and it's the optics of it. You know, it's like, okay, we lost that, we were unlucky to lose it, but who's back stronger this year? You know what I mean? Dublin or and it's just, it's amazing what a manager can convince his players of on the back of a league game. And we heard Keane Ward talking about Donegal drawing with Dublin and what Rory Gallagher will be telling his team. Now, we look at it objectively and we'll say, right, Dublin were the better team for the vast majority of that game, but Rory Gallagher won't be saying that. Rory Gallagher will be saying, you've just drawn with them lads. They're a team that's never been beaten. You're young lads. This is how good you are. Like, this is how a panel is going to frame this. So Rochford can do an awful lot of good with a league game that we might go, ah, well, look, that's only a league game.
Yeah, I'm going to retract my statement about it being only a league, because I'm forgetting about the boost that will come to the first team to end this Dublin record, which is in the intro of every match report about Dublin. Now, it is what, you know, even when they draw and they're not all that convincing as well, they're still unbeaten. Brian Fenton still never tasted defeat. So the team that knocks them off that perch will get a boost. Whatever the manager says to them, they will personally take an awful lot from that.
Yeah, because they have a couple of new players. Like, I mean, Boland's in this year, and this is the whole thing. How can they believe they can beat Dublin if they've never beaten them? And how can they beat them if they don't believe they can beat them? You know what I mean? So they have to be like, I actually think there's so much importance.
They have beat them. You know, there's a lot of players in that Mayo team.
That wasn't this Dublin team, though. Like, I mean, since 2012, there's not that many of the Dublin lads.
I understand, but as a county, they have still beat them, and that's the thing. You know, I would look more into it. The Kerry and Down situation, for example, in Championship, Kerry have never beat Down, and that's a psychological, you know, disadvantage.
There's not a big sample size, though. You know,
I understand that, but you know, with Mayo, you know, I still believe that those players, every time they take the field against Dublin, you know, compare themselves and say, we are leg for leg here. You know, if we can just be more ruthless and clinical in front of goals and be less unfortunate in front of our own goals, then certainly, you know, we can beat them. Going back to the Donegal point and Rory Gallagher, what he will be telling his players also is, you know, for 5 minutes you played football, you got 2 goals. That's what you can do. Imagine you can lift that up and pick it up for 60, 65 minutes in a game. What will you do to teams then, you know? That's another way of boosting a team's mentality. But, you know,
it's all about confidence, isn't it? And building your team up. And I remember Justin McNulty was brilliant at that. Like, I mean, before Justin took over, we would have had a reputation of not being that big. You know what I mean? Not being a big physical team. So he picked 3 of our biggest men in our half forward line. Like, he picked a team of big players. He even played some defenders in the half forward line. And we were doing weights. And McNulty was walking around as we were doing weights. I've never seen a Laois team as big. That, you you know what I mean? Look what you're, you know, there's constant reinforcement, and we're walking around like we're, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Constant, and that's sports psychology, is constantly telling yourself stuff and convincing you that you're that little bit better than you
must
are.
Must have been tough to fit the 5e in the car for the trip back to Dublin after that.
No, they copped on to us at that stage.
It was a
yeah, we were
gone.
Talking about confidence, will Mayo be as confident in this league as they will after, you know, putting a good beating down on their local rivals who have been a bit uppity in recent times?
They always do that. They always beat Roscommon. I don't think they're too concerned about Roscommon. It sounds like there's a stampede going on over our heads here. But it's just because I've lost my train of thought completely here. Is Lee Keegan, what's your thoughts on Lee Keegan playing on the Saturday after winning an All-Ireland club the previous...
He's very non-committal when you asked him about it a few days beforehand.
Yeah. It's like we were talking to him on the Thursday and he says, I'm not really sure, I haven't talked to Stephen yet. Next minute he's coming on scoring 2 points. But it's just an example of the unbelievable attitude of this Mayo team. I really can't understand how anyone can criticise them. Like, I mean, Lee Keegan's just togging back out. Dermot Connolly's not back with Dublin yet, and I actually think that's good management. Don't bring Dermot in. He's had a long year. And if I was a manager, I'd say, Lee, take 3 weeks off there. Just keep yourself ticking over. But it's just this, I'd say Lee begged them to go back in.
But you know what, it could be a case, and once again we're on the outside, we don't know what's going on. It could be a case that Stephen Rochford wants Lee Keegan available last weekend and this weekend, get the Dublin game out of the way because he's an instrumental player and key figure amongst the Mayo pack, and then give him a month off, maybe keep him fresh for the championship, you know. And that
maybe
could be
yeah.
a way of doing it, and that would be very wise and sensible management from my point of view as well.
Yeah, that's true. What about the other new faces? Well, we look at the Mayo team from the last day, like, I mean, Boland has played his first 3 league games, like he's wing forward, and him playing wing forward had Dermot O'Connor in midfield. I like the look of Dermot O'Connor in midfield. Killian O'Connor's played centre forward the last 3 games. So there's a little bit of change going on with Mayo, maybe. And we know Kevin McLaughlin has moved back into the forwards we talked about before. We have Jason Gibbons back in the team. Jason Gibbons is interesting. He was on the team last year until he got injured against Galway and went off after 21 minutes, missed the rest of the whole championship. So he's back in. Like, I don't know, like, there's a freshness to Mayo without having brought in all that many new faces.
Yeah, and it's amazing, you know, a positional switch, it'll give a player serious impetus and you know, a desire to go out and express himself. Jamie O'Connor, for example, you know, from playing wing half forward to be thrown into the mix, into the melting pot of midfield, is a massive move. And I think that's one that he will thrive on because he's an exceptionally good player.
Yeah, I think he's tailor made for midfield.
Oh, he's a wonderful athlete. Like, he's rangy. He's clearly a lot stronger than he looks.
Yeah.
He's one of those. But is midfield the one spot where Mayo are actually pretty well served? And is he going to add that much, or is he going to cause headaches in terms of selection?
Yeah, well, it's hard to know. I think Mayo can't come with the same 15 as they did last year. Like, they need to freshen it up, and they need to freshen maybe 4 positions up, whether it be new players or positional changes or just bring something new to their game. I think they've done that. Like, I think some 2 or 3 players we're not expecting might potentially lose out on the Mayo team.
And they could be coming from the under-21 success as well.
Yeah, they've got confidence. Boland, like, won in All-Ireland, and that makes a big difference. Just on Dublin, lads, because we talked about Dublin a lot on Monday. I think that their days of experimenting are probably over now. I mean, you look at their forward line and midfield last week. I know they had Fenton in midfield, but they had Redden along with him. Then they had Shane Carty from St. Vincent's. Niall Scully, he's still a good player, but they don't have Garan and McHugh in the corner. Like, that's arguably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 non regulars in their last 7. Do you know what I mean? They're playing Mayo at home this weekend. If Dublin lose to Mayo, they're pretty much out because it's the top 2 going to the final.
Yeah.
I think this is after the first 3 games, lads, you've all had your chances. The cavalry's back now and we're back to our best team.
It could well be a case that's it, but is winning a national league really what Jim Gavin wants to achieve this year?
I think they want everything,
I know, and if I was in his situation, I'd be greedy as hell too. You know, there's nothing like the feeling of winning games and winning trophies, and you know, but certainly, you know, there will be teams, more and more teams seem to be catching on to the Dublin way of playing, and they are certainly getting closer to them in terms of results, and they have drawn a few games, you know. And I may add that they have been against Ulster teams recently as well. So, you know, maybe Jim Gavin is happy and content with the teams that he's putting out, and they still haven't been beaten. You know, so, you know, that there in itself is supplying him with confidence in the resources that he has available to him too.
Isn't there a risk in, you know, bringing in five or six, you know, top class players who have played together for years and years, but is there a risk in bringing them all back in together at once for a match against one of their main rivals, or are they going to, you know, do the reverse of what they've already done and start drip feeding back in Paul Flynn, Bernard Brogan, Dermot Connolly? You know,
yeah,
bringing them all back in together might be upsetting whatever they have going at the moment.
Yeah, see, McManaman has played a couple of league games. McCauley has as well. You know, this is the first time we saw Flynn at the weekend, but Flynn is just one of his leaders. I think Flynn will be back in, and I think Dublin might have in their heads, like, we probably don't want to give Mayo any little bit of belief, yeah, that, you know, just keep putting these lads down, you know.
I would say the changes that will be made will be McManaman and McCauley for sure, and definitely, you know, Flynn will play a role. Will he start him, or will he keep him for reserve and take him in? But he'll certainly play his part. But I don't think the likes of Bernard Brogan's going to start this weekend, and I certainly don't think that Jim McConnelly's going to start, you know. And, you know, so there's still going to be opportunity for the guys who have been in reserve and getting their chance in the first couple of games to still make their statement and make it against one of the better teams in the country, but also in Croke Park.
Yeah, I think Mayo are looking well positioned to win this Saturday night. I'm pretty confident from looking at their team.
If Dublin do win with a, you know, say a 70% team, yeah, the damage that could do to Mayo as well. If we're talking about the benefit they could get psychologically from beating them,
yeah,
losing to an understrength Dublin team could set them back as well, couldn't,
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's actually, would you believe, and I would be 100% in agreement with that statement, but that's what happened to Kildare. Manager lynched them after the Auburn Cup final and says that performance wasn't good enough. So they lost to Dublin's third string and then they come out and have a brilliant start to the league. So that's very hard to analyse this bloody football, I tell you that much.
It's not easy, but looking at Mayo's background team, man, I want to mention an old teammate of mine is Tony McEntee. You know, Tony is one of the most confident people that you'll ever come across in terms of instilling belief and having an arrogance about himself.
Yeah.
But he'll be driving that into the Mayo team and he'll be saying, yous are better than Dublin. There's no doubt in my mind yous are better than Dublin. Go and compete against them and go and get the result. And there's an arrogance about Tony that you can only like, you know, and there's no doubt in my mind. You could see it in patches and spells last year, but he's certainly working in the background on the confidence and the arrogance of the Mayo players as well.
Yeah, look, it'll be interesting to see. Looking forward to it. All right, up next, we'll have a look at some accumulators.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey at football.
We probably, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Kieran.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Meath at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
Predictions, Mikey, you've gone for four teams. You have experience on the hurling accumulators without any success, so you're in good company here because we're still waiting for a bloody accumulator. When you have Poxy Meath, that Limerick, I'm not joking, because last week I called Limerick, Kerry, Galway and Tipperary. Tipperary is a good call, but separately then when I went in I did Limerick, Louth, who were 5-4, and Tipperary, and Limerick let me down. Like, I mean, they were three really good ones, and Limerick losing to Carlow after being up at half time. Some weird stuff going on, lads. It's like it's all conspiring against us. Mikey, who have you gone for?
I have gone for Meath to beat Galway.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, I just think you've said it before, Galway, not necessarily a league team. I don't think anybody's going on a run in that division. It's a snake pit.
Except for Galway, who you backed against.
That's what I said. They're not going to go on a run because it's going to end.
They're on a run. They're on a run,
buddy. It's going to end with Meath.
Okay.
And I think there's going to, you know, I think that Meath team will bounce back. I've gone for Sligo to beat Laois because, as we all know, Sligo's a hard place to go.
Yeah, it is.
Park.
Hard place to go.
Leitrim to beat Carlow because I love Leitrim and I don't know, Carlo can't have that many good days in a row.
You need to learn from my mistake. Never bet against Carlo. You don't know the golden rule that I've learned the hard way.
And the only one I've gone for that has any bit of science behind it is Monaghan to beat Tyrone. because they're on a run, and I've just said that teams on a run are going to continue on a run, and not. And they also, the last time they played a Tyrone away in the league, they won.
They beat them. Actually, I remember, yeah. I remember that result.
And 5-2 is a very nice price for the leaders of the league.
Monaghan were the only team. I had a 5-team accumulator, and I had Tyrone back when Monaghan beat Tyrone. I couldn't believe they beat them in Omagh. I don't think they'll beat them this time. But that's okay. So what does that all add up to?
I'll be a rich man. It's about 30-1, I think.
Right. I can actually see every single one of them being wrong, but I could make a strong case for all of them. Like, well, yeah, in fairness,
Leash aren't going to win until
in fairness, you've picked a lot of ones that are kind of borderline both sides, which is, you know, it's not easy to get those ones right. Stevie, what did you go for?
Well, I hope I have an improvement on the last few weeks. But looking back at last week's 7-team accumulator, when I was absolutely ridiculed here, the only two teams that let me down were Meath away to Down, and you certainly couldn't have seen Down beating them.
Great and hard luck stories.
And the other one is Kerry let me down massively away to, or at home to Monaghan. But
yeah, but this is the point I was trying to make to you, Stevie. Yes, you're unlucky, but the laws of probability will state that the more teams you pick in an accumulator, the bigger chance you have of one or two of them.
So this week, instead of a 7-team accumulator, I've gone for 13. No, I'm only joking. I've gone for 4 teams. I've learnt my lesson. I am going to go for Kerry to bounce back. 2 defeats on the row. I can't see it happening the third time.
Laws of probability again.
Yeah,
so Kerry don't lose 3 in a row.
Kerry away to Roscommon this week. I fancy Kerry. Galway to continue their
unbelievable
start to the league, away to Meath, and keep themselves top of League 2. And then I've gone for Westmeath away to Waterford, who are sitting second in Division 4, and Wexford, who are top in Division 4, away to Wicklow. So I've gone for 4 away teams.
Yeah.
The overall odds, I'm not too sure.
Kerry are 1-3, I know that. Galway are 5-6. Westmeath are 2-5. I'm not sure what Wexford...
Their odds on as well.
Wexford are odds on as well. So, like, I mean, I suppose that might be... You might be maybe 4-1. It's not too much. Like, I mean, if you're looking...
We'll check it out now. So
yeah, you could be checking it out while I'm calling out mine. I'm going for Mayo 7-4 straight away. You put on your tenor, you lose my tenor. I'm gone. I'm not going any further here. But I'm purely because of what we were talking about there. Mayo have to win this game, in my opinion. Dublin don't, and Mayo kind of team I think is a lot stronger and further along the way this year so far. Kildare to beat Fermanagh 4-9 I think is a good price. Kildare, obviously Connellits Park in Newbridge is a very tough place to go, Mikey. It's another one on that list. I'm going for Galway to continue their incredibly hot streak, probably the form team in the whole league. They're 5-6 to beat Meath, and Westmeath to beat were they playing again? Westmeath Waterford away. I think they're well reasonably enough priced at 2-5 to beat Waterford. Westmeath, like I've said from the very outset, Westmeath are by far and away too strong for that division, and they should be, you know, well able to beat the likes of Waterford.
Just a shame your bet's going to be dead in the water on Saturday night.
Well, that's an awful heartbreaking thing, because like I was saying, I had Limerick in these accumulators and they lost to Carlow on Saturday night, and all your Sunday's ruined then. You don't have any carryover. Those 4 results come to 10-1. So, you know, you have a good chance there on that. So we'll see how they go. I'm not holding too much hope, lads, because our record hasn't been outstanding. But the thing about this is, and it's always the way with the league, is the first 3 or 4 rounds, the shadow boxing, you'll see it'll be reflected in Dublin's team when it's picked. Yeah. Shadow boxing's over now. Now you're heading, especially the last 3 league games are an awful lot easier to predict, because their main men are back. They're heading towards championship intensity, and it's a lot easier to predict games.
So the last few weeks, Wally is guaranteed to pick winners.
I will be guaranteed to play this audio back to him as well.
I'm just saying it will be a lot easier, and that's all we have time for this week. We're going to leave it there. We'll be back on Monday with a review show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.